Okay, so I was, while in the Navy, I was transferred onto a ship, a tender called the Simon Lake. It was a submarine tender where submarines pulled up alongside. I got onto the ship while it was still in the shipyards being refitted in Pascagoula, Mississippi. It's very hot and humid down there. So there for about 3 or 4 months, and then we went out for sea trials after being refitted, and we ended up going over to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Well, on our way over to Guantanamo Bay, we're in the, you know, driving out of the shipping lanes, you know, staying away from the shipping lanes. And all of a sudden, I was on the bridge when a distress call came across.
Oh, man.
Okay, well, the distress call, I don't know what language it was in. I think I remember, but it was, it took 3 or 4 times for them to find the right person that could understand the language. They kept thinking it was Portuguese or whatever it was. Well, it ended up that they found the guy who spoke sort of a pidgin French, and that's what they're speaking over the distress call. Well, we were very quiet for a while because we're a Navy ship going on maneuvers, and we're not supposed to make ourselves known where we're at. Well, finally, we found out that nobody was going to the rescue, so we were obligated to go figure out who it is. Well, we found out it was a Haitian refugee boat fleeing from Haiti. You remember, this is back in about 1986, so this is still at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, when they weren't quite sure exactly what was all going on. So we came up to this little boat. We were coming into it, and we could see a little boat drifting in the middle of the shipping lanes, and all these humongous cargo ships just driving right by, and very, you know, like they were curious big animals searching to see what the ship was, but they didn't want to stop and help. Well, we were equipped to do that, so we got close to them. And what it came, there's about 30 or 40 people on this little ship that was stranded, and it didn't have any power. It lost its power. So we get down there, the guy that was ahead, because I was in the weapons department, and the officer that was over our actual group was assigned to the little dinghy boat, whatever we called it, to go out and rescue these people. So our little boat got down there in the water. They got them down there, and they went over and got a bunch of the Haitians and brought them over to our ship, and they got on. They went back and forth 3 or 4 times. Well, it was starting to get in the afternoon, and they got the last of them off. Well, just as the last one was off and they got loaded up, a goat stuck its head out the door of the boat and was just going like crazy. Well, our officer decided, you could tell, they went back to get the little goat. Remember, we're in the middle of the ocean, and there's a little bit of waves. It wasn't a big wave, but for little boats in the water, it was a big wave. So our boat came alongside to where the goat was, and the goat was just looking down at our little boat, but it was sort of, both boats were swaying back and forth a little bit. Well, just as our officer was reaching up to grab the goat to get him out of the thing, a wave come along and just pushed both boats together really quick. Well, our officer, you know, because he was off balance, grabbed hold of the other ship to grab his balance, and then the two boats separated apart. And then our officer was dangling off the side of the other boat. And then the two boats came back together because of the way the waves worked. Just crushed his legs, hit his legs. I don't know exactly what damage it. And the little goat's over the top just the whole time. Well, then our boat had to get away with our officer dangling off the side of the boat. And it came back around, grabbed a hold of the... got it back around there, and they got the officer back in the boat and came over there. Yep. Well, of course, they left the goat in the boat, you know, so, okay, we're not going to put him in. Our officer came up. He was hurt. So you can't leave a stranded ship, little boat like that, in the middle of the ship.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
So what they did is they called up the Marines. The Marines came up. And here's that little goat sticking his head out of the thing going, And so they got the Marines out there, and they got on the 20-millimeter guns and their little, and they did target practice on the little boat to try to sink it. And eventually, after a time, they got enough hits on it, it started to catch on fire, you know. So we followed it, you know, stayed around till the boat had sunk. And it was late in the evening by then, by the time it sunk. And then we went on. Well, the very next morning, we get up, and we're in all our little department meetings, waiting for our officer guy. We had an officer come down and tell us. He says, he said something like, during the middle of the night, somebody went on the side of the boat and painted a little goat sign with a nut sign through it. And the captain is livid about it because like in World War II and things, when you sunk a ship, you put the symbol of the ship on the side. Well, that's what they did. They put a little goat thing on the side. That was our refugee rescue, with the sinking of the goat. So, yeah. And then we spent a month in Cuba. That was getting the ship certified back to be battle ready. Even though we weren't a battleship, we still had weapons and we still had to certify. Then after coming back to the States to resupply, we spent a 10-day voyage about heading over to Scotland. To Holy Loch Scotland was the name of the loch or the bay. Dunoon Scotland was the name of the little town that was right there. So on the way over, I didn't get a lot of sleep when I was doing this stuff for about a month or 2 months. Didn't get a lot of sleep. And you always miss the meals. I remember one time I actually was able to get on the voyage over to get up during lunchtime to get a hot meal. And I was all excited. I got two hamburgers. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden the ship is turning. I guess we were heading into a storm. And the ship turned to get, to the waves the right way. And all of a sudden, the ship started to rock from side to side. Our ship, big ship. This is a big ship. Side to side. And, I didn't know this, but on a surface ship, because I'm used to submarines, surface ship, they didn't really secure the tables and chairs in the mess hall very well. So it started to rock. And all the tables in the mess hall started to scoot to one side. I was next to a pole, and I was not going to leave those hamburgers. I stood next to a pole when it rocked one way. I stood next to a pole the other. When it started to rock the other way, I turned around. And there's people sliding this way and food sliding this way. I was successful. By the time it all ended, I still had my meal with me. And then the officer over the mess hall says, everybody out now. And being so used to following orders, I set my meal down and walked out. And I go, halfway down the hallway, I go, why didn't you just grab my two hamburgers and walk out? So I didn't get to have lunch that day. So we pull into Scotland, and we're replacing a ship called the Hundley. It was another sub-tender. It was an older tender than ours was. We were replacing that one. So we got there over to Scotland, and I had spent some time over in Australia for a couple of years. So I was used to accents a little bit, a little bit of foreign accents. So we get over to Scotland. And when we finally got up the ship to explore the little town, I was hanging around with a couple guys, and some Scottish people come up to me. Oh, you guys knew off the ship, type of a thing. Had a little discussion with them. Everybody else was looking at me. What are they saying? They're speaking English. Don't you understand what they're saying? They
didn't understand the language or
the accent.
The accents of what they were talking about.
The accents. And to me, I didn't have a problem. Yeah. I'd already gone through that, over in Australia. So I was over in Australia for 3.5 years, not Australia, Scotland for 3.5 years. I was over there when the airplane crashed that came over from Germany and it exploded. I'll remember the name in a minute. It was a very famous thing. A lot of military soldiers were being flown back. I don't know the exact period, if it was for the holidays or whatever. But a terrorist had planted a bomb on the plane, and it blew up. It was about 40, 60 kilometers away from where we were stationed at. Man. Lockerbie, Scotland.
Lockerbie, Scotland.
Lockerbie, Scotland. And it, when it crashed, it came out really quick that it crashed. We went on lockdown because we were a nuclear facility, nuclear site. Because we supplied those to the submarines and stuff. It's because that's what I did in the military. I was a missile technician. So the submarines would come alongside. So we locked down for a month and a half during that. I mean, not a month and a half, a couple days. probably, if I remember right, thinking it was a terrorist attack. But we've also had a lot of incidents over there, like Greenpeace. And I remember once I was up on top of the hill. Mm-hmm. To them, their mountains, to us, their hills. I was up on top of the hill taking pictures of our ship from up high.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see this little itty-bitty boat, you know, one-man rubber boat standing around, and a little police boat chasing it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see all the people, because we had a couple submarines alongside the tender at the moment. And you can see people on the submarines and the tender scrambling to get ready. What we were trained to do was if the Greenpeace was getting close, we would go out with fire hoses.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have the fire hoses
primed. Out.
So if they got close to the ship, we were allowed to, you know, squirt them down, you know, to keep them off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, theoretically, the Marines were all excited because, you know, if that Greenpeace person actually touched deck on the submarine,
mm-hmm.
that they're in violation of a whole bunch of laws, I guess, military rule, they could literally be shot. But of course, politically, you didn't want to do that. So the object was to squirt them all down with, you know, leave them back in the water. It never happened. Nobody ever got close enough to the sub. That's what they were trying to do. It was all politics
and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that was three and a half years. That was an interesting experience over there. Long 3.5 years. Great place to travel from. Probably not the best duty, but for what I did. But it was a great location to travel from. The I left in 1990 is when I got out of the military from Scotland. I transferred out at Scotland, and they closed down Holy Loch, the base, I understand, about 95. So it was about 5 years after I left is when they actually closed down the base. Since there, and they decommissioned the Simon Lake. I can't remember. I think around the same time. I think that was this last port of call. I don't remember. I haven't researched it much for now. But I did spend, before that, I spent about 7-8 months aboard a ballistic submarine as a missile technician, was what my MOS, my designation was. So I did, that's what I did. It was an electronics program and just happened to be involved with the missiles. So that was my basic stuff there. So it was literally 2 years of schooling before I even stepped aboard a ship, which was a submarine, the first ship. They decommissioned my ship. The ship I was on was the SSBN 623. It was the Nathan Hale. You know, the Nathan Hale. And I always get the wrong quote because I know it's different than what you remember it as. But, you know, when he was caught by the British as a spy, mm-hmm. I regret that I had but one life to give for my country. Or something of that nature.
Yeah.
There's a little twist on the quote, but I remember going back into the engine room. They had that etched back in the engine room on the big steering wheel on the back. It had that quote on the back of the engine room. Interesting experience. I had a good time on the submarine as far as the technology goes. I thought it was very interesting. A lot of cramped spaces. I remember one time we were doing what's called angles and dangles. Angles and dangles were tests that you did after you get out of the shipyard, after you finish fixing it up. You go out and you do quick, you know, deep, not deep dives, but angle dives and angle rises up. But I remember one time when we were doing that, one guy, one enlisted guy was up there near the torpedo room. And at the torpedo room, between the torpedo room and the bridge is where officer country was at. So he got up there, and when the ship started to rise back up at the steep angle, he had his socks on, and he surfboarded down the angle going down the ship, and he clipped the executive officer, if I remember right. But he was going so fast, nobody ever saw him. So they never caught who it was that clipped the commanding officer going down. Another interesting story. When I was on the submarine, about 1985, 86, somewhere in between there, we were off the coast of Florida doing testing.
Yes.
It was more testing. It didn't have anything to do with me as a missile technician. It was usually three or four weeks of just sitting around putting it up. But what it was, because it didn't have anything. We went to, we had to go to missile battle stations once or mm-hmm. twice type of a thing. But most of it had to do with the officers and all their stuff, and the bridge crew, which I wasn't a part of the bridge crew. Well, the very last thing was we were going to do the hide and seek, the war games.
Yes.
Okay, so we were going to do the where the surface ships were supposed to find us and destroy us, electronically, and we were supposed to do the same thing to the
satellite battleship.
Yeah, that type of thing. So we went out of the designated zone area for a couple of days, zigzagged around, and then right at the designated time, we hit the area we were supposed to be in. But of course, we went the silent running, shut down everything, walked around in socks, nobody did anything, you didn't move, most of the electronics is shut down, to decrease our signature in the water, okay? So there's no communication. So here we are in the area, and we were zigzagging in and out trying to find these surface ships. We were getting reports from the bridge that they weren't finding a single ship on the surface for this war game. He said, we circled the area twice, I think, if I remember right, not finding a single surface ship that was involved in this operation. He said, the captain was livid. Stay off the bridge. Because this is, this is part of his, I understand, qualification and advancement. Wait a minute. And he's not, nobody's finding anything.
And this is a prior career guy as well, isn't
Yeah, this is, those are career guys. Well, then all of a sudden, we broke off and left. He said, it's over with. We're done. We surfaced, we communicated, and then we left the area. Okay, I didn't know what was there. 3 weeks later, they told us what happened. Almost to the minute that we pulled into the area is when the space shuttle blew up. So the space shuttle blew up, so all the surface ships took off to go to that area, which wasn't too far away, to help in the search and rescue of the space shuttle. I think it was the Columbia. I don't remember which one it was. Columbia. So they didn't tell us for a while until after, I think we got back in the port or something is when they told us what had happened. So that was interesting. So I was there when that happened. Didn't know it, but I was there.
Till later, right?
Yeah, till later. So that was that one. Then they decommissioned my sub. It happened to do with the SALT II treaty with the Russians. So that's where I was, based on the needs of the Navy, assigned to the Simon Lake, the tender, the submarines pulled alongside. That's when I ended up over in Scotland. There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, here's my story.